Welcome to BL Talk, where we discuss issues of importance. These are the matters of concern to minor attracted people in general and boy lovers in particular. Join us every week for a new discussion. Now, here's your host.
Hello and welcome to BL Talk, the weekly podcast where we discuss issues of importance to minor attracted people in general and to boy lovers in particular. Today, our discussion panel we have with us is a boy's XO, dragon lover, Nicholas, Lennon72, and Wolf Runner. Thanks for being here, guys. Our discussion topic today is going to be none other than that of Michael Jackson. Yes, the king of pop himself. Arguably the most famous boy lover ever. And now, what makes us think that he is, or maybe, a boy lover? Where do we get that idea? Well, let's review. Michael Jackson started his singing career with his brothers at the age of 10 in 1969 as the youngest of their singing group called the Jackson Five. The group was a humongous smash success as part of the Motown movement, musical movement. And the star of the group was Michael, as he outshined his brothers so much so that the group's success was considered to be of his making. And their success continued throughout the 70s, which is when he began his solo career while still a teen. And that was a phenomenal success also, leading to his landmark album, the second album I think he made, which is Thriller, in 1982, which became the number one selling album of all time. All time. Think about that. That's huge. The album ruled the early to mid 80s with a string of huge hits that were on the radio constantly throughout the decade. And in the late 80s, his other album, his follow-up to Thriller, Bad, continued his chart-topping success. And he was easily the biggest star of the decade, no doubt about it. It was during the late 80s, during this time, when he started to break away from his dad's oppressive under his thumb, so to speak, and be more on his own. And when he did this, he bought a ranch in Santa Barbara, California, called Neverland Ranch. And that raised some eyebrows because of the way it seemed to be all based around kids and kid interests, with the rides and the merry-go-rounds and the zoo, petting zoos and all that kind of stuff, which was very noticeably kid-oriented. But they, giving him the benefit of the doubt, as they had been doing all along, attributed that to him just having not had a normal childhood, and that he always wanted to be a kid, he said, and didn't want to grow up, and always had that kind of thing about him. So there was a lot that he was allowed to get away with. They noticed that he was never romantically linked with a female. Strange for such a young and good-looking talented guy. There seemed to be some effort to make him and Brooke Shields a pair. But that went nowhere. So whenever he was on the red carpet, he never had a woman on his arms. But instead, increasingly, he seemed to always have a young boy with him. This became more and more and more of a thing, to the point that he was almost always seen with a boy, even holding hands like a couple. It looked like they were a couple. So his biggest romance, quote-unquote, seemed to be not with Brooke Shields or any woman, but with the 9-year-old star of Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin. Even on his world tours, he brought a boy with him, even had the boy sleeping in his hotel with him throughout the tour. This did raise eyebrows with the public, but still, no suspicion of pedophilia was ever seriously directed at him. That is, until that fateful month of August 1993, when it all finally happened. A 13-year-old boy came out and told the press that Michael had been touching him. This boy was his most recent young friend named Jordan Chandler, who was the son of a dentist and aspiring Hollywood screenwriter. The boy's dad was hoping Michael could help him get a movie deal. And when this didn't work out, he apparently turned on Michael, and the boy's claim was made. But in an attempt to quickly put a lid on the whole affair, Michael paid the boy $20 million to stop talking about it, not pursue charges or a lawsuit, and just go away. And that's what happened. But what didn't go away was the perception, now seemingly stuck to Michael forever, that he was a pedophile. A gay pedophile who liked boys, because it was also noted that he was never seen with any little girls. And when girls did come to Neverland Ranch, they were always seeming to be given a second-rate status compared to the boys. They would always try to get rid of the girls and the mother so that Michael could be with the boys all alone. So while he had escaped a trial and all the embarrassment that goes along with that, the payment looked like an admission of guilt. And basically, almost overnight, it seemed like everyone had made up their mind that Michael was a pedophile who liked boys. All throughout the rest of the 90s, Michael kept a pretty low profile. He tried to put out a couple of things. His sister Janet came to his aid in 96 when they put out a video called Scream, which was actually characteristic of his music at the time, because it became increasingly more angry and darker after 1993 and the charges. His music was no longer the light bubblegum stuff that we knew him for. And he basically just stopped making music altogether, but he was still in the public spotlight about 10 years after this 1993 incident. He was back again with being seen openly, even more openly this time, with the boys. There was one in particular who he allowed to be with him in a 2003 documentary, privately made documentary called Living with Michael Jackson by British filmmaker Martin Azhir. And in one scene in this documentary, Michael and the boy, the 12-year-old, his name is Gavin Arvizo, were snuggling up to each other, holding hands, snuggling up to each other, and talking real lovey-dovey to each other. And when Martin asked the question about the sleeping arrangements, Michael would always say he would sleep on the floor and say that Gavin wanted him to sleep in the bed with him, but Michael said, "Oh, if you love me, you'll let me sleep on the floor." You know, and the reporter, she was like, "Oh, if you love me, You know, he kind of caught on to this language and how they sounded very much like a loving couple, like a romantic couple even. And given Michael's past, well, that seemed to kind of raise eyebrows once again, even more. And then here's what happened. From this documentary, Michael was once again charged. What happened in this case was Gavin Arvizo's parents, they didn't like that closeness. And Gavin himself were accusing Michael of inappropriate conduct with him, and that he was touching him. And they said that unlike the previous boy, Jordan, they weren't looking for a payout. They weren't looking just to be paid off and to go about their way. They said they wanted justice, and this was going to trial. And Michael seemed to take a different approach or attitude about this also, saying, like, heck yeah, let's go to trial. I'll prove my innocence. And the trial, as we know, is a long, drawn-out media circus. Basically, no matter what the outcome, with a trial like that going on, the defendant is going to be connected forever with pedophilia and the label of being a pedophile. And Michael actually won the trial, to many people's surprise, that his lawyers convinced the jury beyond a reasonable doubt that he had not touched them. And the way that works is the lawyers of the opposition of the not the defense lawyers, but the other one, the prosecuting ones, have to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Michael touched him. So it had to be pure proof. It couldn't be just a little. There had to be no doubt in the jurors' minds, and they couldn't pull that off. Apparently, Michael's defense did give them some doubts, and even just one doubt means it's not beyond with shadow of a doubt, and that he should be considered not guilty. And in 2005, he was acquitted and declared not guilty. But once again, his reputation was ruined even more. And so he went into self-exile. He went to Bahrain. And by then he had several young kids of his own that he had made in the test tube way with his surrogate mother that he hired, Debbie Rowe. And even just that, the fact that he did not have a regular way of making babies with a woman, that he, you know, did a test tube thing, that he didn't want to touch her, that put a lot of reinforcement into people's beliefs about him also. Everything did. And there was no way around it. So he just had to face that everywhere he went. An interesting thing here is that at the time, NAMBLA offered him to join. They wanted him to join because they were really hoping for a celebrity spokesperson or celebrity member that would give them some legitimacy. But no, Michael wanted nothing to do with them and maintained throughout the whole thing that he was not sexually attracted to boys and that he never did anything sexual with the boys. After he died in 2009, more stuff started coming out and more stories. The biggest being, which was the 2019 documentary, which came out on HBO called Leaving Neverland, which is in both parts one and two, where two of his young friends from the late 80s and early 90s, before Macaulay Culkin, went into, let's say, great, great detail about the things that he did with them. And here's what's interesting is that they had never gotten together, these two guys, former young friends of his, never gotten together to get their stories straight between each other. Yet, the stories matched up perfectly. The things that they said that he did and wanted to do and how he did it and all the little things like the Jesus juice, you know, that he would give them to drink, which is a Coca-Cola can with wine in it, you know, to loosen them up and get them in the mood. On top of the fact that he, Michael, was an alcoholic to begin with. So it made perfect sense. And why did he call it Jesus juice? Well, it was to reason with them that it couldn't possibly be bad if Jesus drank it, right? So, okay, he was now forever labeled and forever will be. And even, like I said, after he passed and the video came out of Leaving Neverland, where they go into great detail about what he did, there's still skeptics, but that sure did convince a lot of people. And the reason we're covering it today is because Michael, being, like I said, arguably the most famous boy lover ever, what boy lovers are going to have an opinion about him, obviously. And so I want to hear what the panelists today think about Michael Jackson. Was he really a boy lover, or was he just trying to relive his lost childhood? Even if he was a boy lover, did he touch them? Is another thing. A lot of people believe that he didn't. A lot of people come to his defense and say, no, he didn't. He would never do that. It was all innocent. A lot of boy lovers, too, actually believe that. So I want to ask you guys, and I will start here with a boy's XO. What do you think about the King of Pop and his proclivity towards boys? Do you think it was a sexual thing or not?
Well, in your view. I tried to start a petting zoo at one time, but you know, boys don't like having their hair messed up.
Ah, right. One boy I knew, he did.
Anyway, I fully believe in my heart of heart, and I know for a fact, actually, and Michael Jackson was definitely BL. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever in my mind. And I'm going to tell you that this is the way it usually goes. If you notice, straight men do not surround themselves, entertain, or whatever with boys. And as a matter of fact, many of them say, oh, kid, get away from me. You know, but, you see a guy like that that has a bunch of boys around him, but you know that he's a boy lover. There's no doubt about mm-hmm. that. That's what I think.
Yes. Good point. If he was a straight man, he would not have young boys, various young boys around him all the time, in his playground, in his house, in his bedroom, in his bed, going on tour with him, asking the mom, you know, can your 9-year-old son drop out of school here for a little while and come on tour with me around the world? You know, sleeping in my bed with me every night. He didn't say that part, but that's what it was going to be. As many of the parents found out, and some did like it, some didn't. Their reactions covered various degrees of.
You know, we have one guy here that's been reading a book about Michael Jackson, so I bet he has some really fresh perspective.
Who is that who's been reading the book about Michael Jackson?
Lennon.
I have.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Nearing the finish line on that book. But yeah, I've been reading, and I'm just about done with the bit about Geordie Chandler, the first one.
Okay, I'm sorry, what is the title of this book?
It is called, it's from J. Randy Parabarelli, mm-hmm. if I can pronounce that right. The name of the book is The Magic, The Madness, The Whole Story, Michael Jackson, Magic, The Madness, The Whole Story, 1958-2009.
Some of
this book was actually in progress before his passing, but I think by the time the book was done, he had passed.
I thought you were going to say you had read the book called Michael Jackson Was My Lover.
No.
Okay.
But, you know, it's kind of interesting because I know when Geordie made his – one thing that really struck me is when Geordie made that first accusation, and I think it was due to pressure from his parents, mainly his dad.
Right.
When he first made any confession at all of anything sexual going on between him and Michael, he was under some kind of a sedative, you know, because his father was a dentist and was working on his teeth. And I think whatever the name of that drug was, I know a lot of dentists tend to not take
propofol.
That drug. Yes. Dad, who was a dentist, and his dad was working on his tooth.
Oh, now, his dad gave him the propofol?
Yes.
And so that was the beginning of his addiction.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to say here, I don't know about the addiction, but I was going to say here, a lot of people, when they do that, end up getting false memories. And it was after he took that drug that he started saying things about it. So I think that shed some light on that.
Okay, so you think the drug may have given Jordan false memories about Michael,
Absolutely.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Do you think those false memories given with propofol were also shaped by his dad's pushing him to make these accusations?
Yeah, I think so.
So do you think that
I think it's possible.
Do you think his dad gave him the propofol with the hope that it would help him to misremember that, and then his dad has to do is give some well-timed and well-stated suggestions, and lo and behold, now Geordie believes he was molested because of those two things.
I don't know if he's making suggestions or not, but I think it is possible that his dad wanted Geordie to say something, and he got his wish. Now, I'm also going to add, there was at one point during that case when they're like, well, Michael, and of course Michael totally dreaded this, I can't blame him, where they had said, we're going to have to, you know, Geordie at one time was asked to describe what did Michael Jackson's penis look like and all that stuff.
Yeah, I remember that. Uh-huh.
Not everything fell into the way he said it.
Okay.
Like, he thought he was I think it was something like he thought he was uncircumcised, but he was, or vice versa.
Right.
So
okay,
it wasn't exactly as he described it. So anyways, I just think that makes things a bit questionable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That case is questionable. Now, how about the two cases there with, I believe his name was Wade something, from Australia, the dancer who was 7 years old.
Have you seen
Leaving Neverland, where they talk about it?
You're talking about that film with that 2003.
Yes, no,
I'm going to have to watch it again. It has been so long since
Leaving
I've
Neverland,
seen that.
Leaving Neverland is a 2019 documentary about these two boys and their.
Oh, you're talking about 2019 film then.
Yes, correct. Have you seen that one? I'm asking because I'm wondering if you've heard what their accusations are.
I have not seen that film.
Okay. I would highly recommend you see that before you form any final judgments about Michael and whether he was or not a BL. Because those boys actually throughout the course of time and during Michael's first almost trial and then during his 2005 trial, they were behind him all the way. They claimed that he'd never touched them throughout all that time. And then, lo and behold, out of the blue, in 2018, they both come forward and say, yes, we were touched, and this is what he did, and they made a documentary about it, and they both go into extreme detail about what happened between them, and most notably of all, their stories were not corroborated between each other. They didn't get together and get the story straight, yet sounded remarkably similar, and it couldn't have been just coincidence, many are saying, the similarity in their stories. For two people who didn't discuss with each other what happened with each other. So I think that lends some credence to the possibility that it could have happened, the sexual things with them. Not to mention I wish I had remembered to bring this so I could read it to you. There was an article a few years back about one of his maids from the very beginning of this boy period, which started in like 88 or 89, shortly after he bought Neverland Ranch. She said when that happened, when the boys started coming, she said it was just a sudden thing. She said suddenly he was surrounded by little boys all the time, and he was always had his hands on them and was like feeling them all over. And she said when it was time to do the laundry and stuff and she was cleaning the undergarments, and the bed sheets, she said the boys' undergarments were all sticky in the back. You're dried up. And so were the bed sheets of the beds that they slept in. And so that was enough to convince her. And apparently she had enough and left to go look for another job. But the video is out there. And I'd like to give a direction to it. We can add it on after the show, the URL of the video, for people who'd like to see it, as well as point out more directly and specifically where they can find Leaving Neverland parts 1 and 2 in the BL library. Okay, so let me clarify though with you, Lennon. Do you believe that he did touch boys at any point and that he had a desire to? Do you believe that about him?
Here's what I think. I think it is, from what I've been reading and stuff like that, I think it is possible he was a BL. I'm also not ruling out the possibility he could have been asexual.
Right.
As far as him having done anything sexual with the boys, I just at this point right now, it's kind of hard for me to believe that he did. You know, I don't understand why people would wait years and years, you know, after the influence of other people to come out and actually say things. Like in the case of Jordy, I think that we had some gold diggers out there. That's what I think.
Well, the second lawsuit with Jordy, not sorry, the first one was Jordy. The second one was Gavin that he was acquitted of in 2005. That the family said they weren't after his money. They didn't want his money. They just wanted to see him put away. And they didn't want to die from him is what they were saying. Now, I don't know how true that is because they would surely know that even if they weren't seeking money, that if they were to have won that case, money would have come their way. So they could then say, oh, well, I didn't want this money. I wasn't asking for it. It just happened to, you know, be part of the process, but it wasn't our original intention. You know, they could have said that, but they wanted to make it look like they didn't want money at all, that they didn't want to pay off either. So, they took it all away. And then Michael was spitting mad furious. Prove my, okay, now we understand where you're coming from with that, Lennon. And let me move on here to Dragon Lover. And let me, before I ask you, Dragon Lover, I want to let everyone know that you actually wrote a 2-part article about Michael Jackson in Ethos, which was very detailed, very well researched, and very well written.
Yes,
and
thank you.
I didn't quite understand the conclusion you came to at the end, because you, at the very end, you said that something like, did Michael touch those boys? I don't know. Was he a boy lover? I definitely believe he was, which of course is hard to dispute that, you know, with his behavior. And like XO said, no non-boy lover would have a bunch of boys around him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But so let me ask you, in writing that article, did you discover anything new that you didn't know before that may have changed the previous opinion you had of him and his situation there?
Well, to be honest, prior to his passing, I really didn't know too much about him at all, either as a person or as a singer. I was not into his music. I didn't care for it very much. Mm. I listened to heavy metal, and that's the way it was. And then he died. And, you know, things happened in my life, and this, that, and the third. And I came to the conclusion that I'd like to try to research Michael Jackson a little bit more, because he was having these allegations flung at him, and yet he's not serving a day of jail.
Because he had never been convicted. Said,
huh?
Because he had never been convicted.
Right.
In a trial.
Right. I mean, they've settled out of court and, you know, is found not guilty and all that. He had an excellent team of attorneys. Mm-hmm. But as far as my statement at the end of the article, I have to be honest. I don't know for a fact that he did or he didn't. Those two guys that put that Leaving Neverland thing together, they're a couple of effing scumbags, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're you're effing not the only one that way.
They're after money. That's all they want. They are still trying to sue his estate today.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes.
For what? I'm curious. Do you know?
Well, it has to do with the sexual abuse, and they feel that they should be compensated.
You're talking about the Wade and Robson and the other one.
Yeah.
The ones who are interviewed in Leaving Neverland.
Yeah.
That they are strictly out for money.
I believe that, yes.
Okay, if that was the case, why wouldn't they have come out earlier with it? Why did they defend him for so long?
Well, because there was this thing where you had to be careful and pick your battles. The game that they were in with being dancers and all that, you really have to pick your battles carefully. If they tried to come after him and after him and after him as if he was still alive, that could ruin their careers forever.
True, yeah.
But okay. Now Michael Jackson is dead. He's not around to defend himself anymore. It's all in the team of an attorney representing the Jackson estate.
Yeah.
So they feel more comfortable doing it now that he's gone. But they're being looked at as really, really nasty guys because in our eyes, Michael Jackson treated them really, really well. Really well. And now they're preparing to be ungrateful.
Yeah, let me say about you, about him treating them very, very well. I believe it was Liza Minnelli. No, it was, oh gosh, who was it? It was some TV talk show host.
Oprah?
It could have been Oprah, but what she said was that she said it was ridiculous for those boys to be claiming that they were being abused and brutalized and mistreated like that, because in every picture they're smiling ear to ear, look like they couldn't be more happy to be there. that they were happy in those pictures. And so she was saying that doesn't look like, you know, someone who's being abused.
No, it doesn't.
The boy being happy and always wanting to be with him. Now, mm-hmm. what boy would always want to be with someone who's abusing him or hurting him in any way? None.
Nope.
But they always wanted to be with him. They never wanted to leave. And even I remember reading a story about when Michael started bringing Macaulay around, they became jealous actually because now they were not his number one favorite young friends. They had been demoted and didn't understand why. And well, we can figure it out. It must have been puberty was happening. And so he traded them in for a new model, which they didn't expect and which nearly all boys in BL relationships don't expect that. They expect it to, because that's all they know are relationships that are forever and ever, like their parents with marriage and other such types of, you know, forever commitments to couples. So that's interesting.
Macaulay, you know, Macaulay defends him to this day.
Yes, he does. Yeah. I was reading about that recently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They were very good friends, apparently. And Macaulay went to his funeral and everything and said he still visits the grave often. He said that meeting and spending time with Michael was one of the best possible things in his childhood. You know, like one of his most treasured memories of his childhood is the time he spent with Michael. Okay, so now let's take a moment to pause and hear from everyone's favorite YF, Sean. Take it away, Sean.
Hi, this is Sean at YFPM Radio. There's a lot of great music, and YFPM plays all of it. There's lots of really talented DJs with great shows. Just to name a few, on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, here's Dragon Lover's Class of Rock Show. On Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, here's the Brunch Hour with DJ Zoom Zoom 4. And on Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time is Dragon Lover's AE's Throwback. And at 7 p.m. Eastern is the Slide Zone with DJ XO and long sets of uninterrupted classic rock plus a new episode of BL Talk every week. Then on Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time is Dragon Lover's Classic Metal. And on Friday, he's back again at 11 a.m. Eastern with the 60s Trip. On Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, you're in the Wolf's Den with Wolf Renner. And the following DJs have shows at various days and times to be announced. There's Dutch with the Weekend Mix, DJ Skeeter. Oh, and you'll have a real blast with DJ Sammy BL. Then there's the Madhouse with DJ LT Dreamer and Musical Variety with Proud and Tiger. And Rock and Contemporary Classics with my favorite DJ, Little Nicky. We hope you'll join us on Wired PM Radio for the best variety of music. This is your favorite YF, Sean, and I'll see you next time.
We are back. And was I talking with someone that got cut off by this? Wasn't I talking with you, Lennon?
Well, you were talking with Dragon Lover, but...
Dragon, did you want to finish your train of thought or what you were trying to say?
Well, basically, do I believe Michael Jackson is a boy lover? Absolutely, 150%. I really do believe that. Would he harm a child by doing anything forcefully to him? I 100% do not believe that. I do not believe it because, as you said in your own dialogue back there, Michael Jackson did not have a chance to live his own childhood. It just doesn't happen. It never happened. And him putting up Neverland and all that stuff, he kind of regressed in age, lived the childhood. He just didn't have a chance to live. He was just trying to make it a good time for everybody. That's all it was.
And so that's what made him want to, after he grew up, be around kids because he wasn't allowed to be around kids so much when he was a kid.
Exactly.
So he was making up for lost time, I think.
Brothers. And his brothers were not necessarily very nice to him either. They could be damn mean to him. Their nickname for him was Big Nose.
Yeah, I know. I heard that. Yeah. It's terrible. That's why throughout the rest of his life, he kept whittling away his nose to make it smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Because you can imagine them just must have been really bothering him for his whole life for so long.
Oh, yeah. What if they call him Big Penis?
Well, apparently he did, according to one of these boys in the Leaving Neverland documentary.
But he didn't whittle that away.
Yeah. Well, they talk about such stuff in explicit detail that I've heard of many BLs watching it almost as a porn and kind of like getting off, you know, jerking off to it. Just the descriptions.
You mean with Wade and Jimmy?
That's it, Wade and Jimmy.
Yeah.
So they really told all. I mean, they went from nothing to saying nothing to telling all. And you said, Dragon Lover, that you do believe he was a boy lover, but that he did not touch the boys sexually.
He may have touched them sexually, but not in an aggressive and forceful way.
In a way that would make it easier for them to be consenting.
Right.
To be a consenting party.
There you go.
Okay. And he knew that the law was not very happy about that. And see, here's the thing. Let me give you just a little bit more history. When in 1993, when Neverland Ranch got raided and he came out in handcuffs, he never wanted to go back there again.
I'm sure in my heart of hearts that Michael Jackson was a careful, loving person to those boys. He never hurt any of them, I don't believe.
Right. Yes. A lot of BLs believe that he didn't do anything to hurt them, but he may have had sexual contact with them. But remember that we don't equate that as automatically being hurt or abused the way rest of society does.
That definitely is not abuse.
Right. Yeah. But that's the way society is. It's got such extreme no tolerance kind of rules. I mean, I can imagine in the future when we have the smart glasses and if you look so much as look at a boy and in my report, you know, if you're looking before report back to Google that you're looking at too many boys, you know, and then those smart glasses will have the ability to undress people and yes, including boys just by looking at them and having, you know, a certain app setting and all that. So those are the kind of things that the future will bring for boy lovers. But I wanted to say also that these boys, just about all of them, were jealous when Michael brought his new boy along. And the boy that Michael had been, you know, for months exclusively giving attention to now would find himself sidetracked. And that they didn't like that, you know. And a lot of them felt that way when Macaulay Culkin came along because he was Michael's new darling, you know, the new love of his life. And so they would often get kind of distraught when he would give them the talk about how it's pretty much over sexually because of, you know, because you're too old, you know. I don't know how he told them, but that was the case. Let's move on now to Nicholas. Nicholas, please let us partake of your wisdom.
Yes, well, I'm sorry, but little Nikki isn't here right now. But I just want to say that sharing your BL talk with someone is the most wonderful thing you can do. And I have a joke for you right now, Mr. Zoom.
I love a good joke.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson who?
Very good, little boy. Now, here's $2.7 million.
Ow! Oh,
my lucky day.
Michael, they have little you. Nikki back now. Yeah here's little Nikki now.
Hey.
You know what? I wonder what he did. I wonder what he did with that money. Like, he's however old now, in his 30s.
I wonder,
Yeah, it'd be an interesting story there to read about. His whole experience.
Right, yeah. I don't know, man. Well, yeah, you know, he paid out all that kind of money. Yeah, you know, you don't pay out that kind of money if you are innocent and you're falsely accused. You just don't do it. That's an admission of guilt. You can say it because it was a civil trial, whatever you want to say, you know. If I was asked if he's a BL, of course he was a BL. To me, it seems so patently obvious. You know, it's just, to me, the big shame of it is that, you know, once you move on past that question, that he couldn't, he couldn't be honest about it. And, you know, and he couldn't say, but yeah, I don't offend. I don't do anything wrong, you know, because here we are and we got to hide like we're, you know, these terrible deviants all of our lives. And Michael Jackson is just one of those guys, enormously talented, but yeah, he was a BL and good for him. It's just too bad he had to suffer because of it.
Do you think that at some points when in his time with these boys, that perhaps he got a little bit too sloppy, and his carelessness, increased a bit, you know,
he was
too comfortable with it?
I think he was extremely careful, but I think his hubris got the better of him. As it, you know, as of course it would. If you are going to, you know, try and hide the fact that you're a BL, number one, don't build an amusement park, a little miniature Disneyland in your backyard. Okay. Right. You know, but the thing was, he was very careful online. You know, he did not have a big record of searches and all that, because they went through everything, like his records, and you know, the internet was full blown. It was going on then. So you know, places, sites, and things like that he visited, he was pretty darn careful, I think. But there was just so much money and so much ability to spend and do things with people that the signs, you know, and with boys, that the signs were just so obvious to me, certainly.
Yeah, and you could say that he didn't need the porn because with his money and influence, he could go out and get a real boy anytime. So that's probably his thinking behind it. But, he also had harassment, outside of his house for a while and things like that. But people came around, and he actually moved back to America, in 2006. 3 years before he passed away in his house in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Okay, and there's a movie about it. It's called Searching for Neverland. It's a fictional movie. It's about Michael Jackson's last few years, where he goes to Vegas because he's trying to get signed up for a big show contract with one of the big hotels. And he moves there, and he gets a bodyguard and everything. And so the show thing didn't work out, but being there, he just couldn't avoid getting noticed, you know?
Yeah.
So what they would do was dress up, like him and his kids would wear like masks and stuff like that, and they'd go out in public. And, I thought that was interesting.
And I remember seeing his, I also saw a documentary, and I think it's a little bit different than the one you're talking about, but where he was getting ready for This Is It, the big concert. You know, was interesting. I tell you what, we lost such a unique individual. I miss Michael Jackson so much, just for the weirdness. And, to make me feel a little bit like, hey, I'm not alone in the world. And there's this guy who's trying to create this semblance of a normal life, you know, having these kids, obviously not his own kids, but they were, constructed like it was his own little special family and everything, doing everything he could because he had all that money. He just thought he had the power to fool everybody. You know, Abraham Lincoln, I think it was, who said, you can fool some of the people all the time. You can fool all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And certainly you can't fool other BS. I'm sorry.
There's a tongue twister, you know.
I guess
there.
So.
But true, yes. But going back to what I was saying about this movie of his last few months, he was very lonely. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to speculate. This is entirely my opinion. But I think a big part of why he committed suicide and he was having problems, you know, like his alcoholism and drug use increased greatly. I think that it was because they took away his boys. He couldn't have boys around him anymore in any way.
And so I didn't think it was suicide, though.
I'm sorry?
I didn't think it was suicide. I thought it was just an overdose.
Right, no, it was an overdose. Yeah, yeah, not suicide. But what I'm saying is that taking his boys away from him and no longer allowing him to be around boys, to talk to boys, I think that was a big... It played a big part in his overdose, in his distraught lifestyle. Because, you know, he couldn't sleep. And right. Every morning, he still couldn't fall asleep. He had terrible insomnia. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So he used hospital-grade drugs to put him to sleep.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a combination, Zoom. I think it was a combination of, yes, he couldn't be with the boys who he really loved, but also he was turned into Frankenstein's monster by society, and he was just... I think part of that was why he couldn't sleep and why he had such terrible malaise. You know, it was just, combination of those things. So he was truly vilified.
Yeah. He was both loved and vilified at the same time.
Yep.
And, you know, speaking of Frankenstein's monster, yeah, I can see that, like, you know, cause of his face and all of that, you know, not just the way he was treated, but the way he looked also. Yeah, the way his skin got really strangely pink, you know, on his face. And, but that's a different story. About the topic of whether or not he was a child molester, or I don't wish to use that term, that's the outside world's term, whether or not he had sexual relations with any of these children is what we're really discussing. And if he did, why? Well, we should know why. But if he did, how did he handle it to keep it safe? And if he didn't do it, he was worried, he said he was worried that if any of the kids said no, that they wouldn't like him from then on. So he only asked certain kids who he thought was receptive to it. And this is, of course, part of the lore. It's not, this might not be actual fact. But let me go ahead and move on now here to Wolf Runner. I'm sure you have quite a few opinions on Michael and his, the way he lived his life. And
wait, hold it.
Antics.
We were going to let Nikki talk, right?
Oh, was it Nikki?
I thought
Nikki was already talking,
couldn't get a word in. Come on, man.
I'd like to introduce everybody to my new publicist. Lennon is here today with us. And thank you, buddy. I appreciate it, man.
So what were you saying there, Nicholas? I apologize. I guess that was when we cut off. But
no, I wrapped up most of what I was going to say. I just, I do believe that he was a BL, and I think the proof is pretty obvious on so many things. If you compare it to anybody who is heterosexual or who has been accused of a crime, it's like O.J. Simpson. You don't run and do with your best friend in the before Bronco going down the freeway with a gun to your head if you're innocent of murder.
Right.
And you don't pay out all this money. You don't do all this crazy stuff if you didn't, have a little bit of fun, whatever he did. And I don't think he did anything, too terribly wrong with those boys. I really don't. So,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Like it was said, they always looked happy in the pictures. They always came across happy. None of them looked like they were brutalized or mistreated in any way or abused. I'd say arguably the abuse they got was mostly from home is what I would think.
Yeah, I'd say they generally had the time of their lives, And where are those underwear today that the maid supposedly found? Why wouldn't she hide those and keep those like Monica Lewinsky's dress? Just ask it.
Yeah, well, she might have. I don't think the article talked about it. But that'd be interesting to see that. I wouldn't want to touch it, just to be clear.
I'm Michael Jackson.
All right, so moving on to Wolf Runner. Okay.
So
I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm interested to hear.
Yeah. Hey, buddy.
I've got my opinions on it, and some might say, well, you're just naive or whatever, but if you look at statistics and read about the boys that were abused, kids that were abused, by family members, uncles, this, that, they have to be around them. They don't act the same toward them, but they have to be at family functions, and they're scared to say something because it might hurt the family. And, but these boys, they didn't have to go back. They could have said, hey, Michael touched me, and I'm afraid, and I don't want to go back, and I'm uncomfortable. None of them did that.
Right, exactly. Good point.
None of them did that. So unless anybody was in the bedroom with them, they're never going to know. And my honest opinion is, they slept in Michael's bed. But as Michael said in many interviews, they asked him about the boys sleeping in the bed, and he was like, you people are the perverts because you're saying that if you go to bed with somebody, you're automatically having sex. A bed was made for sleeping. We were sleeping. We might have cuddled. We might have, tickled each other or whatever we were playing. Mm-hmm. Nothing sexual was ever done. Now, Do I believe nothing sexual? Depending on the kid. But Macaulay, you know, he's dead, never changed his story about he never touched me in that way.
And maybe he did.
As far as moving on to new boys, you know, he would give up one and go to another. I believe that Michael was just trying to not fixate on one boy and give all his attention to that one child. He wanted to give other kids the chance to experience the same thing. He wasn't moving on to the next one as a predator would. He was just trying to fit as many and give as many enjoyment as he possibly could, because he had the opportunity. He had the money. He had the resources to do exactly that.
So then the thing about it being sexual was entirely made up, you think, by Jordy's dad.
100%. But again, was it a coerced, manipulated situation? If it happened, I don't think it was. I don't think anybody was forced.
Because he didn't have to. I mean, if the boy didn't want to do it, he would just find another one.
It was consensual.
Yeah. Right. Definitely. Also, the thing about that is, like Exo said, no straight man would surround himself with young boys 24/7. You know, and riding roller coasters with them and playing go-karts with them all the time, to the complete exclusion of any type of adult activity in his life. That does point to possible the arrested development theory that we heard from earlier, about earlier. I mean,
Well, I don't know. I don't believe Michael Jackson was gay. I don't.
No.
I was married and I'm a boy lover. And when I got divorced, yeah, I surrounded myself with boys. I never touched any of them, but I still considered myself straight. I would have went out with women if I had the chance.
Well, you would be straight / BL. Sort of like how.
Right. I don't believe Michael was gay.
No, me either.
I don't know what category to put him in, actually, because.
But do you believe he's a boy lover?
Oh, 1,000%.
Who has pursued sex with some of these boys and achieved it?
Yep, 1,000%. I believe he was a BL.
Okay, but if he did pursue these sex acts and do them with these boys, that would make him a different kind of BL, a sexual one. And so him always saying it's not sexual started to ring false more and more as time went on, even into 2013 and 2014. I remember reading about how one of the boys, because they go visit the Neverland Ranch on a tour, one of the boys lost his underwear there or something and had to leave. He didn't have time to find it. And then one of the commentators wrote, "Oh my gosh, even the ghost is doing it now." Or even his ghost is doing it now. You know, which I thought was pretty funny. I thought it was pretty funny.
Right.
And my take on the thing and this whole thing is that, indeed he was a boy lover in the romantic and sexual sense. And that with his upbringing and frame of mind and lifestyle of being able to get anything you want when you want, that he really did attempt, like in one instance, or he made a booty call to one of the boys. I don't know if that's just urban legend, but that's what I heard. And he always wanted boys around him. And that goes also to the theory I was saying, is that's why he passed away so young recently, is because not having his boys around him, it just plunged him into the depths of despair, and that's where he had to live, in a dark place. And especially knowing that he's never going to be able to have another boy. What he wants, the one thing he wants, is the one thing people won't let him have. You know, so it's kind of ironic.
I'm not so sure it went that dark and deep. I think it was mainly because he was being hounded, and the tours were killing him.
Right, yeah. That's why
you listen to other rock bands and performers and stuff, and you know how many performers passed out on stage because they were fatigued so much for touring. Tours take a lot out of people.
Oh, indeed.
And I believe a lot of that had to do with just his lifestyle, not because he couldn't have boys around. He had his own kids he was focusing on at that time.
True. But, I mean, the kind of relationship with the boy that he wanted to have the most, he wasn't able to do anymore. He had to keep that.
I don't think that put him over the edge. Plus the fact that I believe his doctor killed him and it wasn't suicide.
Mm. Interesting. Now, why do you think his doctor killed him?
Because his doctor wasn't even, I don't even think, licensed.
He was not licensed to administer anesthesia because he was a heart doctor. He was a cardiologist.
Correct. But he's pumping somebody full of drugs that he really knows very little about.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, they all said he had so much drugs in him that was administered by the doctor, that's what killed him. So he didn't do it.
Oh, right. Exactly. He asked the doctor to do it. The doctor wouldn't. And then when they finally did, is when he had his, you know, final moments. And so that's why what you're saying, I was going to doubt you. But then I remembered that the main doctor is being charged for allowing him to have this stuff. The doctor, Conrad Murray, his anesthesiologist who administered the propofol and other drugs, actually did go to prison for like about a year, I believe. So he served his time for that, because it's a very serious crime, is that prescription fraud, and that he was in on it.
So the theory of him being in a dark place and
I say that contributed to it, though. I would say that contributed to it, because boys were like his lifeblood, you know, and to take that away all of a sudden, you know, it was a shock to him, I believe, a shock to his system. And they were his everything, you know, and then suddenly you've got to stay, you know, 20 feet away from them. Must have been terribly frustrating.
Well, to touch on that subject, not that I'm, you know, rich or anything, or I have the means to be like he was, but when I got... I had six BLs, I mean, I had six YFs at the same time. Three of them I lost for a move, and then not even 2 years later, because of my health conditions and my personal life, I lost the other three. Don't have them now.
Oh, no.
I'm not depressed. Do I miss them?
You would have every right to do.
But I'm not in a dark spot because I can't have a boy next to me. Same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was also used to it, used to having that. And any time he wanted, in any way that he wanted, he could have it. That's what mega success does to your mind. It gives you that.
With my main YF, I spent probably 2 to 3 days a week with him. And he's slept over at my house.
In a sleeping bag on the floor, on the couch?
On a fold-out couch bed.
Oh, okay, right.
Bed.
Oh, yeah, those are comfortable.
And now, actually, at my one house, he had his own bed in his own, basically, room.
Oh, cool, yeah.
So I was around him just as much as Michael was around his boys.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And you did many things with him related to teaching and bowling and all that stuff. I don't know that Michael taught his boys any sports, because I don't think Michael knew it himself. He would need someone to teach him. But he basically tried to get them more and more interested in sex, and then leading to, you know, them having sex. And this is what you read a lot from the Christian commentary. Or the very right wing commentary, is that was his only goal, was to get them out of their underwear and have a one night stand, pretty much. But yeah, he did escape a lot of embarrassment with the trial, but regardless, he'd been judged in the court of public opinion And there was no way of going around that for him or going back, which is why I believe he went off to Bahrain, just to get away from it for a while and regroup, you know, and he could be in full disguise because he'd cover his face up like the, with the burqa, you know, like the Arabic women do. And so he did eventually come back to the U.S. And like I was telling you about this movie, he moved to Las Vegas and he got a house that all his, he put all his kids in it and was going to do a show at one of the casinos. But that fell through. And when it did, he got the offer to do the London thing. And that's when he passed away, when he was preparing for that. So that never happened. And also, let me throw in there, Michael had an interesting acting career with Split, playing the Scarecrow on The Wizard of Oz, and what else? I think he must have done something else. I know he did that Captain Theo for the Disneyland thing, but no, I don't think he was much of an actor. Is what it is? He wanted to act. He wanted to act, but in the context of his music.
Right.
Okay. So who have we not spoken with here? Did
Nikki.
Nikki. Okay, last but definitely not least. All right, Nicholas, so you would know a bit more about this, I presume, than most of us here. And with such knowledge about it, what is the informed decision you've made about this whole affair?
You mean about Michael Jackson?
Yes, and about Michael Jackson and whether he touched the boys.
I saw that documentary you were talking about with Wade Robson and Jimmy Safechuck. My Lord, Jimmy Safechuck was such a doll on that Pepsi commercial.
Saw Leaving Neverland. Great. Okay, that helps.
Yeah, and I saw the the interview with the videographer, the guy who wasn't Terry Bradley, it was the other guy. Anyway, and I saw the Oprah interview, all that stuff, and I remember I lived through all that stuff too, like the rest of us did. So I believe that there is a chance that Michael did some of the things that they talked about a little bit, you know, and because it was so explicit, I just don't see it as so terrible. Honestly, if it happened to me as a boy, I just wouldn't talk about it, you know. Right. I don't know. I just it's not like he, you know, he penetrated them or anything like that. One of them said that he tried, I believe. Not
yes, exactly.
Spoiler alert.
He tried to when he was 7, and then after he got older, he was able to successfully do it.
I didn't think penetration ever happened. Nothing that I heard described, and I did not know penetration ever actually fully happened. Are you sure that was what they talked about?
No, I don't think any of them ever said there was no penetration. Not right. But I believe Michael has on certain occasions. Like what he would do as an alternate is that intercrural method, which is where you put the penis between his legs up, you know, as close to the top as you can, and to tell him to press his legs together as tight as you can, and then you know, start going at it, and then have the boy like clenches his leg muscles, or you know, to give more satisfaction.
Yeah.
I
believe it's possible, yes, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up this way. All right, I'm going to ask each of you whether you believe that he did touch, didn't have to be those boys, but any of the boys in his career, okay? XO, yes or no, did he ever touch any of the boys that came along with him during the course of his career?
I've touched all of them.
He touched all of them.
Well, okay, I don't know that he touched all of them, but I would say that he was having sex with them.
Yeah, with many of them.
Not in my mind.
Yeah, okay. All right, Dragon Lover, what do you think? Was he sexually active with these boys, or was it all a big lie?
I believe that he engaged in some light sexual activity with these boys, yes.
Okay. Nothing too heavy, nothing too serious, or that would make them go running to mommy and daddy, screaming and crying. Okay. All right, and Nicholas, what would you say about this? About yes or no, did he have sex with his young friends during this time?
Yes.
And you know, what is it that makes, what is it, I'm curious, that makes you so confidently say yes? Or what
There were too many private moments where he was alone and the parents said, oh, sure, you guys have fun. And, and I think he did. I don't think anything was terrible at all. I really don't. But I think that, sure. Absolutely. And when the lights were off, maybe the kid was asleep. Sure.
Yeah. Especially then, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Come on.
Okay. All right. Lennon 72. I'm guessing here that you don't think he touched any of them.
I have heard no solid proof whatsoever that he has. So I'm not going to assume he has.
So you want a jury of, reasonable, beyond a reasonable doubt.
Exactly.
It's not enough for you that he had boys everywhere with him, holding hands with him.
No, that is not enough for me.
Okay. All right. So we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you for listening, everyone. And thank you to Dragon Lover, Nicholas, Gary, Lennon 72, Ryan James, Wolf Runner, and Sammy. Everyone, please be sure to tune in for next week's show, either by listening live on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time to Wired PM Radio with DJ XO, which will be a part of his show, The Slide Zone, or catch us at either the Boy Love Library, which is bl-library.org, or the official BL Talk website, which is bl-talk.com, where you can hear the latest episodes as well as the entire archive of past episodes on demand. And also remember, you can email us at contact@bl-talk.com. So this is Zoom Zoom 4 signing off, and I will see you all again next week. Thanks for being here. Bye, everyone.
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on BL Talk are solely those of the individual participant or speaker and do not reflect the official stance of Wired PM Radio or any of its affiliates. Thank you.